It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All right, boys and girls, here we go. Headlines on Softy and Dick on a gorgeous Monday night right here on 950 KJR, brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
There has to be a flag on that. That's ridiculous.
The Mariners losing yesterday in Texas.
Yay!
10-2. They got a much deserved, although not really deserved, though. You kind of get that day off when you win games.
Yeah, but you should earn that day off.
Well, they were getting it. It was pre-scheduled, so they get it no matter what. Day off. Head to the Dodgers tomorrow at Chavez Ravine. Justin Dunn will pitch tomorrow. You say who say what. Kikuchi will pitch on Wednesday before the M's come back against the Tribe on Thursday.
The defending champion Storm had five players in double figures today, including Jewel Lloyd, as they beat Phoenix in their second and final preseason scrimmage, 103-93. The team also released Brittany Brown and Peyton Williams.
Baseball, Reds lead the Pirates 7-1, top of the fourth. Red Sox, Baltimore tied at one in the fourth. Angels, Astros about to get underway from Houston. All right, joining us right now on the radio show, but before that, I'm sorry, I stepped on your magic there. I got to find my little...
Don't step on my...
I got to step on your deal. All right, go ahead and
our friends at West Coast Men's Health. Perform the way you used to. Call them right now, 206-312-7008, and don't let Softy step on you.
I think the Mariners need West Coast Men's Health so they
can fix their bats.
Perform the way they used to. Way back in the day. Maybe that's the problem, man. Maybe they got some EO. Maybe they got some... I was going to say something really disgusting there, but it's a family show, so I'll just keep it off the air. Anyway, joining us right now on the program from Jacksonville, Fat Tony Smith is back with us. Tony, how are you, pal? What's going on?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me back.
Shocker, Trevor Lawrence is a Jaguar. How stunned were you by that?
Man, it's been party time for a couple weeks in Jacksonville. No joke. It's, you know, the idea of this franchise that hadn't had the franchise quarterback filled in at that spot since Mark Brunell stepped away and wound up in Washington. It's been almost 20 years since Brunell was here, and it's been that long since they've had a true franchise quarterback, and it certainly looks like the best chance to solve that came to town a couple weeks ago with the first pick in the draft.
Is it just 100% certain he is going to start day one, or is there a chance that they're like, you know, Urban's going to work him in over the first month or two of the season?
I mean, nothing is for certain, but I would be stunned if we got to week one of the season and Trevor Lawrence wasn't the guy taking the first snap for the Jags. I'd be surprised if he wasn't taking the first snap at training camp.
Yeah.
When we get to that, like, he's the guy, and they're gonna sink or swim with Trevor Lawrence at quarterback would be my expectation.
How surprised would you be if he's a bust, Tony?
As stunned as I'd be if he's not getting the first snap of the season. Honestly, it's just the way that a prospect like Trevor Lawrence gets talked about. You know, not all number one picks are created equal, right? And you can talk about, well, number one overall quarterbacks bust at this kind of rate. Well, not quarterbacks that are talked about the way that Peyton Manning and John Elway and Andrew Luck were discussed. Those guys don't bust. They usually have really, really solid to great careers in the National Football League, and that's my baseline expectation for Trevor Lawrence is that he's going to be a really solid starter for a decade, and anything above that would not be a surprise.
I think that's fair. I think that short list of can't-miss guys, yeah, they don't miss. So that's probably true. But the surprise in the first round, Tony, was not the number one pick. It was your second first-round pick, Travis Etienne, who, great running back, obviously, but not really in need of this team. He had an all-rookie running back last year in James Robinson.
Yeah, James Robinson should have been a Pro Bowler last year. That's the kind of season he had as an undrafted rookie free agent coming here to Jacksonville. And one of the things that Urban Meyer and his coaching staff have talked about since he got here was they have got to add speed. They needed it all over the field. So the expectation was they could go a bunch of different directions at 25, but it was not going to be a surprise that they added another receiver. It's not exactly like they need to with the depth chart they have there with DJ Chark. They added Marvin Jones. They have Laviska Shenault, who they took at the top of the second round last year. So it's not like it's easy to plug in somebody there. There wasn't another explosive tight end in this draft beyond Kyle Pitts, but they wanted to add speed. I think Travis Etienne is less a running back and more a playmaker for the offense. He's going to be a running back on the depth chart. There's no doubt about that. But he's going to be the guy that can come in on third downs. I think he's going to be the pass-catching back. I think the Jaguars honestly look at it as an opportunity to try to create that kind of Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara thing that New Orleans got when they drafted Kamara, that you have one guy that's the space guy and you have the one guy that's the pound the rock guy, and certainly these two guys profile as those types of players.
Fat Tony Smith, 1010 XL in Jacksonville with us on the air. So I'm trying to figure out the biggest move made by the Jags, Trevor Lawrence or Tim Tebow. I mean, if you would have told me you get both those guys on the same roster, wow, look the hell out. Why'd they sign Tim Tebow?
Why did they sign Tim Tebow? Look, their tight end depth chart is abysmal. We've been talking about this for a few weeks now since the draft and the report came out from Adam Schefter that the Jags had worked out Tebow as a tight end. I've had the same opinion on this since the moment this story came out. This is a guy who hasn't taken a regular season NFL snap in 9 years. He's not a tight end. He's been playing baseball. It sounded silly to me from the very beginning. The Jaguars' tight end depth chart is a joke. There's just not much there. They got a couple quality blocking tight ends, and their best receiving tight end is James O'Shaughnessy. Can they do some trick plays potentially with Tim Tebow? Maybe. But if it's me, I'm signing one of the guys that's a free agent that, I don't know, plays tight end in the NFL. Yeah. Seems like a novel idea if you want to add a tight end to your roster to sign a tight end. But obviously the relationship with Urban Meyer and Tim Tebow is there. That has to be a factor for them deciding to make this kind of play. Not even a guarantee that he'll wind up making the 53-man roster. But if there was a way to get on this roster and make the 53, the path would be to be playing tight end and be able to give them anything. And if nothing else, if Tim can show that he can do some gadget stuff, maybe. But I still think it's just an outside chance that he even winds up on the 53-man roster.
How much do you think it was Tim Tebow bringing him in as a football player versus just bringing him in as Tim Tebow? I mean, a guy that everybody looked up to in that locker room, you know, that they grew up watching him, and he could be kind of a mentor for Trevor Lawrence.
I think there's clearly a relationship between Urban Meyer and Tim Tebow, right? And there's no way to get around that. Tim won the Heisman playing for Urban Meyer. They won a national championship together down there at Florida. They obviously know each other really, really well, and they're comfortable with one another. I don't know how much I buy the whole know the program thing in the NFL. I think it has some effect, but I think it gets overblown a lot of the time. So I think Urban is very comfortable with Tim. I'm not as comfortable with it, as I said. We'll see if it turns into anything at all, but this is a locker room. Look, it's Trevor Lawrence's team,
yeah,
right? Like it's going to be how good of a leader is Trevor Lawrence, and if he's not a very good leader, which again would stun me based on everything you've seen and heard about Trevor Lawrence, then the locker room could fall apart. But beyond that, no, I'm not worried about the leadership impact of adding a guy like Tim Tebow to the locker room. And he's a great dude, and he'll be less of a distraction than he would have been 8 years ago if you wanted to bring him into an NFL locker room. Obviously, it's still a story.
Yeah.
Because I'm talking to you guys right now. I mean, it is what it is. Tim Tebow is a big enough name that if he's going to get back into the NFL anywhere, it would be a story. Him coming to Jacksonville, yeah, it makes the story a little bit bigger because there are those ties to the University of Florida right down the road. And well, he's from here. He went to high school here in Jacksonville. Right.
Well, he's also only 6'2", so he's massively undersized to play tight end in the NFL.
No doubt.
That's number one. And then number two, isn't this the kind of thing, Tony, and Tony Smith, again, Jacksonville with us on the air, radio host down there, isn't this the kind of thing that if they win games, whatever, but if they lose and they're having problems offensively and guys are not on the same page, then they'll just clown Urban Meyer for this thing?
Well, yeah, and he has to know that going in, you know, that it is, if, and again, I'm not even sure if he'll wind up making the 53-man roster.
Right.
But could it blow up in his face? Yeah, to some degree. I don't, again, I think it's a lot bigger deal a number of years ago than it is now.
Right.
You know, Tim has been away from football long enough that I don't think it's the same kind of situation that he would be stepping into, but I keep falling back on the idea of, if you want a tight end, go sign a tight end. You know, like, Trey Burton played for Urban Meyer of Florida, too. He's still a free agent. He can do some gadget stuff if you need him to. He was a quarterback when Urban recruited him to Florida. We saw what he did with the trick play in the Super Bowl. He can do some of that. If that's what you're looking for, then go get a guy that we've seen catch for 400 yards in the league. You know, like, we've seen Trey Burton make plays at that position, and now we'll see if Tim Tebow can make that transition.
Gotcha. Listen, Tony, great stuff, man. Appreciate it. It'd be fun to kind of keep an eye on this and see where it goes, man. Appreciate it. We'll talk down the road.
Sounds good. Anytime,
thanks,
guys.
You got it. Tony Smith with us on the radio show. John Wilner, and we could do two things. We can talk about it today or wait until tomorrow, but I think we should do both. How's that? He came out with his new updated post-spring Pac-12 North predictions. Where does UW end up? We'll come back, chat about that next on Softy and Dick.
In one app.
You're listening to Softy and Dick. Now, back to the show. Ladies and gentlemen.
I won't pay for it.
Softy and Dick on 950 KJR.
All right, 5:21 on a Monday night right here on KJR. Tomorrow at 4:20, courtesy of SimplySeattle.com, John Wilner will join us on the air. And this might be a candidate for a what the hell are you talking about Wilner segment tomorrow on the show. So John came out with his post-spring football projections for the Pac-12. I'm going to go in reverse order, okay? If I can, in the north, if that's okay.
Okay.
So in last place in the Pac-12 North, Washington State University. Number five,
last place.
Oh, Oregon State. Number four, Stanford Cardinal. Number three.
In Puerto Rico, we call ourselves Boricua. We are proud, passionate, and full of life. On our island, adventure finds you. Strangers aren't strangers for long. The size of the audience doesn't change the beauty of the music. And we celebrate every last ray of sun. Live Boricua.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18-plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
California Golden Bears and your friend Justin Wilcox. That means at number two, clearly he's got to have the Oregon Ducks, right? Because the Huskies are number one. You would be incorrect. He now has Washington at number two, previously number one. And his reasoning is this. The primary reason for the North shakeup is the injury to Zion Tupelo-Fatui, who will miss most, if not all, of the season. The Huskies should have the best offensive line in the league and a solid defense, but are they dynamic enough on either side of the ball to outlast the Ducks? Are there enough big plays in the pipeline? We aren't convinced, says John Wilner. So he's got the Oregon Ducks number one, the Huskies number two, and he says the primary reason is the injury to ZTF, who blew his Achilles out, and let's face it, probably going to miss the entire year.
Very disappointed in John, because if he would have put Oregon one in the first place, I mean, I might have disagreed, but I wouldn't have an issue with it. To flip-flop based on the injury to one defensive lineman. Now, he's a very good defensive lineman.
Yeah.
But let's just ask Vegas. Let's ask Vegas how many points Khalil Mack is worth. How many points J.J. Watt in his prime is worth. It's like a half a point. for the greatest defensive lineman in the NFL's history is worth a half a point in a game. How much is ZTF worth in a football game? Not enough to flip-flop a team from first to second in the Pac-12.
Well, how big was the gap, though, right? I mean, if they're right there to begin with and they're neck and neck, and he's got maybe UW beating Oregon in triple overtime by 3 points, or I guess it'd be 2 points because of the two-point conversion. If he believes that they are neck and neck, and he also believes that Zion Tupeloa-Fatui was going to be a Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year candidate, you know, and maybe a guy that would put up 15 sacks and force 10 fumbles, then if they are that close, then I can see in that scenario Zion absolutely making an impact. And I just think tomorrow we have to ask him how close were these teams to begin with, right? Because if there was a pretty decent gap between UW and Oregon, then I would agree. I don't think losing Zion would be enough to make up the gap. But if they are very, very close, if it was like a coin flip for him to decide who he was going to pick one and pick two, and then, oh, now Zion's out. Like, for example, I don't know. Give me a name for Oregon. If Michael Redd or C.J. Verdell, whoever, goes down, running back, wide receivers. If Oregon was a skosh above UW, then I could see maybe putting him at number two if a guy like that. I mean, all those guys are important. So I think the other factor potentially is who takes his spot, right? I mean, who's that guy going to be to get that pressure that we're talking about here? I don't know if anybody really emerged in the spring that's an obvious candidate. I thought Braylon Trice looked really good. But there's one big problem with judging guys on what you see in the spring game. They're not allowed to hit the quarterback.
Right.
It changes everything.
But you can see how disruptive they are in the backfield.
Right, but there's a gigantic difference between getting in the backfield and getting home.
Right.
Right? I mean, when you can't hit the quarterback, so they just don't have anybody with any data that shows that they'll be absolutely counted on to put up numbers. And somebody will emerge. Somebody always does. But Zion was a guy that, I mean, would you admit he was a Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year candidate going
in? Yes, he was. Yes, he was. We loved what we saw in him. I just think that position is important, probably more important than, say, a strong safety.
Yeah.
But not like, okay, if the Huskies had a returning, a returning all Pac-12 type quarterback, obviously. You lose that guy, you could drop from one to three.
Yeah.
A running back. Let's say the Cougars were supposed to be number one, and we found out that Max Borgie went out for the year tomorrow. Okay,
right.
Drop him down. That is much bigger impact than what a pass rusher is going to give you.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I just think, again, I want to know where they were in the first place. If they were right there neck and neck, and Wilner's like, you know what, I can't figure this out. And he went and asked his kid, and his kid said, just take Washington, that maybe under that scenario that Zion would be enough to flip it. But yeah, I mean, I think his point, though, about Oregon skill players to me is a fair one, though, because, and if I'm missing somebody here, correct me. There's a couple of guys I know that have left, and I'm not sure if these guys are all back or not, but Micah Pittman, Jalen Redd, Johnny Johnson, C.J. Verdell, Travis Dye. They have a lot of familiar names at the skill spots in Oregon. Running back at UW, no problem. Running back and offensive line, no problem. I think I'm just absolutely, like everybody else, dying to know what this receiver core looks like in November.
Well, Oregon and Washington are mirror images. I mean, they're like total opposites. I mean, Oregon struggles on the offensive line. Meanwhile, the Huskies have 125 offensive line games played, or whatever the number you threw out there. Huh. The defensive backfield for Oregon, you can take shots at their defensive backfield. Meanwhile, the Husky defensive backfield is airtight. And then you flip it around. You mentioned some of the positions that Oregon really is strong in. The Huskies struggling. So it's going to be a fascinating race between those two teams.
They're two different teams for sure.
There are.
I wouldn't say their offensive line's bad, though, by the way. I think their offensive line's pretty good in Oregon.
Well,
their offensive line was terrible.
I mean, not what it was Herbert's last year.
Well, sure, but they've got four guys that have been there for 4 years that are starting for them on their offensive line, if not more than that. So they've got experience. I know that.
I mean, John brought it up in his piece on Oregon. He said, the offensive line is a question mark. So it's just maybe we're used to having, Oregon having the best offensive line in the conference, and that's not going to be the case this year, likely.
Well, UW should have the best offensive
line.
I mean, the Huskies are—they're going to just pound the ball down people's throats. And when they do need to be dynamic, I guess the question that John's asking is, can they be dynamic when they face a defense that puts nine guys in the box, for example, right? Mm-hmm. And they force you to throw. They're mocking you to throw. They're actually pointing at Dylan Morris, going, "Ha ha!" Right? Look at that guy. He's 6 foot tall.
Just look for the big dude
in
the middle.
Well, sure, but they'll double team him. I mean, you know, dude, Kate Otten had games last year where he was taken away. You know that.
Yeah.
So when he's taken away and they have to rely on the outside passing game or the downfield passing game, can they do it? We'll see.
I think that there's enough guys. When you have a group of guys that are all potentially good players, mm-hmm. obviously, let's say there's like six of those guys in the Huskies wide receiving core.
Right.
Okay, two of them, what's the most likely scenario? Two of them are going to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them are going to be okay, and two of them are going to pop. And if that's all you need, you just need two of those guys to be, whoever the two, whether it's Adunze or Bynum or McMillan, just give me two.
Yeah.
Two to pop with Kate Otten, and you got a passing game.
Well, they
got
to find those guys fast. There's no question about that. And, you know, I just don't even think, just because of what happened a year ago and with the history of these wide receivers ever since John Ross and Dante Pettis left, I mean, I don't want to even, I'm not even in the mood to make any proclamations. I don't know, honestly. And I don't have any idea how a Husky fan could know anything about these guys. I mean, outside of Terrell Bynum, these guys have done nothing together. They barely played, for crying out loud. And the two freshmen that we saw a year ago were dropping passes all over the place. So I think 17, Taj Davis, I like what I've seen from him so far. Mm-hmm. I like what I've seen from Sawyer Racanelli. I thought Roma Dunze took a bit of a step in spring ball, but that doesn't mean anything. Let's find out what happens in September when these guys go on the road, they play Michigan, they play a Pac-12 schedule. So to me, having any kind of proclamation on this is what's going to happen, that's what's going to happen, there's nothing wrong with a Husky fan, I think, sitting back and just saying, you know what, that's a question mark.
Yeah.
Because you feel good about the rest of the team. The question marks are at wide receiver, and now that Zion's gone, edge rusher. Those two things. Who will be, by the end of the year, who will be the heroes that will emerge at those spots that we mm-hmm. will be talking about? And I'm guaranteeing there's going to be a couple guys that we're not even talking about right now.
And that is the difference. And if both holes are plugged, this is a Final Four team. If one of the holes are plugged, it's like probably losing in the Pac-12 championship game. And if neither one of the holes are plugged, then John's probably right, and Oregon probably wins the North, and the Huskies go 9-3 and end up in the, you know, Friday night bowl game on ESPN.
So you think if they find, when you say plugged, meaning let's find another defensive end that can do what Zion did, right? Is that fair?
And yeah,
then,
I mean,
and
if
then
it's,
let's
if
find,
we, what I mean by plugged is at the end of the season, we look back and say, wide receiver was not an issue, pass rush was not an issue.
Okay, and you think that they have a quarterback that can get them to a Final Four?
I think they have a team that can get you to the Final Four. And if the rest of the team is so good, which if those two holes are plugged, it is, I think Dylan Morris is good enough to manage your Patrick O'Brien, good enough to manage you to a Final Four with a run-based, defense-based football team.
Wow, their defense has to be really, really good in that scenario. Like,
well, their
elite.
Offense is going to help because elite. A run-based ball control offense helps your defense stay off the field, stay in long, where they're defending long fields instead of short fields. Mm. One helps the other.
Yeah. I hope you're right. I mean, those are a lot of ifs that would come true for you, Dom.
I'm not saying they're going to happen. I don't think they're going to the Final Four this year.
Yeah,
so let me just make that perfectly clear.
Okay.
I do not think they're going to the Final Four.
I mean, I think you're painting a potentially rosy best case scenario for this football team.
Yes.
I mean, that's wow. I mean, that's fine. I hadn't been thinking about the Final Four until you brought it up there like 20 seconds ago. So,
well, because you mentioned those
maybe
are the two weaknesses. And if those two aren't weaknesses, now maybe something else crops up as a weakness. But I don't think we see the quarterback position as a weakness per se. I just don't think we see it as a strength. Is that fair?
Yeah, but that's a problem, though. The quarterback has got to be a strength.
If you're going to be elite, yes.
Right. You can make the Final Four. You can't get away with just having a guy sitting there handing the ball off. Because
but
if you are doing
team,
that, you better be the best running team in the country.
But
and I'm not talking about based on yards per game. I'm talking about based on yards per carry.
But as we saw in 2016, a Pac-12 team with one loss that's not elite can make the Final Four.
Well,
because
but,
the 2016 team was not an elite football team.
Yeah, but
it was a very, very good football team.
Well, compared to what, though?
Compared to the other teams that make
the
Final
Four. Compared to the rest of the country?
Compared to the teams we usually see in the Final Four.
Defensively, they were absolutely elite in 2016.
Yes.
And they had the offensive player of the year in a Pac-12. If Dylan Morris, is it Morris or Moore, by the way? If Dylan Morris.
One's hitting 156 right now.
If Dylan Morris does what Jake Browning did in 2016, then absolutely, you can book your tickets for whatever the hell you want right now.
Yeah.
That would surprise the hell out of me if something like that happened. Very much would surprise me for a variety of reasons. I think that defense, looking back on it in 2016, and maybe Deshaun Watson would have exposed him in the national championship game, I think they could have played with anybody that year. Anybody. I mean, they lost the USC game. They allowed, like, what, 24 in that game? Whatever it was. Alabama did nothing.
Alabama did nothing until Scarborough in the second half.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't hurt. They were playing a quarterback that couldn't throw.
Well, how many offensive, how many points at halftime had their defense given up?
So they allowed 24 overall. Seven came on the pick six, and three more came after Ross's fumble that was inside their own territory. So they only allowed 14 points the entire day, really on their own. I mean, they were fine. The defense was fine in that game.
Against freaking Jalen
Hurts
and
Alabama.
They did
not lose that game because of the defense. They lost that game because they were totally manhandled up front, and they were starting an 18-year-old at center who weighed 270 pounds against Alabama, who came to the table with men. Men! In that game. That's why they lost. So that's what makes me feel good about the future of Husky football. If Jimmy Lake is going to do this whole pro-style thing he's talking about doing, you better damn well be ready to kick somebody's face in on the line of scrimmage. That means defensive tackles and offensive linemen. That's what will take this team to the next level. Not corners, not running backs, not wide receivers. Dominating the defensive and offensive line is what's going to do it. I promise you.
Well, and that's one position. I mean, we don't have that hole in the middle, you know, the stuffer in the middle. We don't have the Vita Vea. We don't have the Danny Shelton. And we don't have the Levi. You know, we'll see if that – I mean, who do you think fills that hole?
Well, either Tuli or Taki. One or the
Tuli
other.
Tuli or Taki, Taki,
it's only
Tuli.
Been 20 damn years since we've been hearing about those guys.
Is that like Booley, Bailey, Bailey, and Booley? We're just going
to – Yes, that's exactly it. I like both those guys, but they got – I mean, when Jimmy Lake even comes out and says, oh, it's time. I mean, I'm tired of talking about these guys. They got to freaking prove it. Hey, would you like an update? Well, that was a little low, by the way. You know what you know what the update on the poll button needs? It needs West Coast Men's Health.
Update on the poll.
So we threw a poll out last week. I got to go back and find it now, for crying out loud. This is what happens when you tweet 75,000 times a day. We got two guys from Oklahoma that are both in Seattle now. Trey Brown at corner for the Hawks and Buki Radley-Hiles playing football for the Huskies. And we thought after having Jenny Carlson on the air, we would ask people which one of them is going to make the bigger impact in Seattle. So do you have it in front of you, by the way?
I'm scouring.
You got the poll? All right. This is where we should have gotten our act together. I can play the music here for a second.
Yeah. How many days ago did you do this? Oh, I got it. Got it.
Got it.
Got it.
Okay.
Which Oklahoma cornerback will have the bigger impact in Seattle? Trey Brown with the Seahawks, Buki Radley-Hiles at UW. Would you like to guess as to what the final result was?
Update on the poll.
1,050
votes. I'm
going to
say Trey Brown by 70 to 30.
How about that? Mm. You would be wrong.
Wow.
Buki, 58%.
Hey!
Trey Brown, 42%.
Yeah. Well, one guy has started a bunch of games in college football and is going into his fourth year, and the other guy is a fourth-round draft pick, right? I mean, if they had drafted three other players in front of Trey Brown,
he'd be forgotten.
We would not be talking about Trey Brown.
That's correct.
If Stone Forsythe was the eighth pick and not the third pick in the draft, nobody's sitting here talking about Stone Forsythe, right? We're talking about these guys because there's no one else to talk about. That's why they're getting talked about. So I think Trey Brown and Stone Forsythe, they look better and bigger than maybe they really are because there's just nobody else to distract from them. So I like that, though, because I think that a guy who's going into his fourth or fifth year in college football, who started a Final Four game for Oklahoma playing in your backfield, I mean, you would think that that should be the guy that's got the bigger impact. He's playing on the same level he was playing a year ago. One other guy is taking it to a whole new level, so he should have a transition.
Now, when you put this poll out, I was a bit confused as to whether you meant this year. Or because obviously Trey Brown has got years of Seahawk football ahead of him, and Bukie's got 12 games.
This year, this year.
Okay. I'm with the voters, honestly. If it's just this year, I'm with the voters. I mean, I don't even know if Trey Brown – what's best-case scenario for Trey Brown? He becomes the starting nickelback is the best-case scenario? I mean, you think he's going to win an outside job right off the bat as a fourth-round draft pick?
Well, who would he have to beat? Let's talk about the guys he would have to beat, right? He would have to beat out, I mean,
Kella.
If DJ Reed's one of them already.
Have to beat out Akella Witherspoon or Trey Flowers.
Right, so, I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't stun me. I don't know how good the guy is. If he's
at least Trey Flowers and Witherspoon at least look like Seahawks corners.
Well, this Jenny said that she thought Trey Brown should have come back for one more year.
Yeah, that's
so
scary.
You know, I would it stun me if he won a starting job? No, because look at what he's competing with. There's nothing there that really is like, oh, he's not beating that guy out. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not the case right now. So I guess it maybe surprise you, but stun you? No, wouldn't stun me at all if he was starting for this football team. He'd have to take a gigantic jump from a guy who should have gone back to school to a guy who 9 months later is starting in the NFL.
No, and Bukie, does he become Miles Bryant? I mean, is that his role?
Well,
think?
Miles Bryant played all over the place. Miles Bryant played safety, corner, and nickel for that football team. So I think right now they're looking at him as a nickel, but I think that the way UW likes to operate, and I've told you this before, that they don't even list corners or safeties on their depth chart. They just list DBs because they want guys to play everywhere. He doesn't look like a safety to me. He's like 5'9".
He's small.
So I think he's He's an Elijah Molden, Miles Bryant type of player, and maybe a little bit more of a powder keg type of body that could blow people up.
Miles Bryant was my favorite Husky pass rusher in the last 5 years.
Well, Taylor Rapp was mine. That's funny.
Really? Okay, right up the middle and blow you up?
Taylor Rapp was mine. All right, 5:40. We'll get a break. A lot more to get to on the show, including Corey Brock joining us and talking some M's in the 6 p.m. hour right here on Softy
Mortgage.
You're listening to Softy and Dick. Now, back to the show. Ladies and gentlemen.
It's enough to make you want to punch them right in the mouth.
Softy and Dick on 950 KJR.
I want to talk about this Bob Baffert story in a second if we can, but somebody texted in 49451 because you know I only check the text line after testimonials are over, so I'm getting caught up now.
Okay.
But this question just came in, and it's funny how I hadn't even thought of this, that we don't even talk about this much anymore. What true freshman do we think can make an impact on the field for UW in 2021? And my response would be, I don't know if there's anybody, because I think the transfer portal has made it that much more difficult for those kids to play right away, right? I mean, if there was a, I don't know, I mean, maybe there's a wide receiver, maybe there was a running back. You know, Giles, is it Jackson? Is that right? The kid from Michigan who's coming in the fall?
Yes.
And then Jalen Polk. I mean, all of a sudden, these guys with experience are taking the roster spots of guys that maybe had inexperience. So, you know, Dick and I were talking about this in the broadcast a couple weeks ago, that all of a sudden we've gone from talking about how many freshmen will play to talking about how many transfers will play.
Yeah, how many newcomers will play. Is Sawyer Racanelli a true freshman?
No, he's a redshirt freshman.
He's a redshirt freshman.
Yeah.
So we're looking at class of 2021.
Right. We're talking Sam Heward, Voight Tunufi.
Quentin Moore.
But he's the transfer. He's a junior college guy. He's not even a freshman.
College guy. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, he's here, but he's played before. He's like 30 years old. So, yeah, he's going to play. Quentin Moore is totally going to play. So if you're talking about just people in the class, then yes, Quentin Moore will qualify.
I think the list is,
isn't that crazy?
Very, very, very small.
Right, but it's nuts how that's not even something that's talked about anymore. Like, boom, overnight, you go from talking about pure freshmen, and instead it's how many transfers are going to play. And I wonder how long this will go.
And that will lead to more people transferring because they're not playing as true freshmen.
Yes. It's like putting together a fantasy football team in a lot of ways. I mean, where would Where would Mike Hopkins be without the transfer portal right now, right? Either A, because without the portal, then all these guys wouldn't have left. They'd still be here. It goes both ways.
So they'd still be bad next year.
But they'd be 5-20. They'd be terrible.
That's right.
So he can just go to the portal. He can clean house. He can say, you know what? I want to take these guys. I want to trade them in for something different.
It's like going to Target.
Totally.
I mean, just, I need one of these, two of those, three of those,
six
naked
of those,
ladies.
Eight of those. You'll get nothing like it, says the NCAA. You've been following the Bob Baffert story at all, by the way? The trainer for the horse that won the Kentucky Derby?
Yes. Yes. I'm trying to, I'm hearing that Bob Baffert, I'm not well versed in horse racing. Obviously, I know who Bob Baffert is, but I did not realize he has had this many run-ins with the steroid police in the past.
Just drugs overall, illegal drugs in horses. And he is, you know, for those that don't know, and I think most people know the name, he's probably right now, I mean, he is the most well-known horse trainer out there in the world.
He's probably the only recognizable
right.
face
he's
of horse racing.
He's got that recognizable
right?
white hair, the glasses, yeah. all the. So people know, I mean, Bob Baffert is one of the very few, I think, recognizable people that transcend the horse racing industry, okay? Mm-hmm. So Bob Baffert's horse, Medina Spirit, or Medina Spirit, I say Medina because we live here, yeah. and there's a Medina like 10 miles away, won the Kentucky Derby and failed a drug test. And this is not the first time this has happened. He had two horses, I think it was last year, 2 years ago, at the Arkansas Derby that both had drug use problems. Justify, who won the Triple Crown a few years ago, also had failed multiple drug tests, and that was kind of a big controversy. The New York Times wrote about it. So there's been a lot of smoke around Bob Baffert, been going on for a long time. So when a horse comes out and fails a drug test, then a lot of people, I think, are going to start rolling their eyes saying, here we go again with this guy. You know, how deep does this really go? Is he the Lance Armstrong of the horse racing industry, yeah. for example? Because he's the biggest name, and he brings a lot of eyeballs to the horse racing industry. And this latest story is that he's saying that his horse picked up an illegal substance because a groom, which is basically a person that takes care of the horse, all right, this person picks the hooves of the horse, it, you know, braids the mane, brushes the horse, feeds it, does all that stuff. He hangs out with the horse almost more than anybody is the groom, okay? Mm-hmm. Mucks the stall, cleans up the poop, the pee, the whole thing, whatever. Mm-hmm. He's saying that one of his grooms had cough syrup and took a leak inside the stall.
And the horse ate it.
Peed in the stall, and it got mixed up with his hay. And the horse ate it. And that's how he got this illegal substance in his system. Now, I am here to tell you right now that it is not uncommon for a groom to pee in a stall at all.
Okay.
Because that's what horses do. They pee in the stall. They right. poop in the stall.
You don't. The horses don't go to the bathroom?
No, they don't leave.
They don't go to the porta potty?
They go right there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They eat, they sleep, they pee, they poop, they do everything they're going to do in the stall. All right? Every now and then they may go out to graze, whatever, but they, you know, that's why you're cleaning the stall, because there's pee and poo in there.
Right.
So, you know, like Gina was at a horse show in the desert a while back, and, you know, there's, you know, grooms in there, and the guy's by himself, and he's mucking the stall. He might have to take a leak, and he might just pee right there.
Sure.
And he's basically peeing on dirt. So it's not uncommon for a guy to do that. But the problem is, this has happened now so many times that there's just no credibility left with him anymore. And there's a lot of people worried that this is going to bring down almost an entire sport. When the biggest name gets busted and the biggest name loses credibility and the industry is struggling to begin with, mm-hmm. there's a lot of people concerned about this. This could be a huge, huge controversy.
Well, what you said second there is the biggest problem is that the attention that horse racing is getting is waning anyway. And now you got the one guy that everybody recognizes is you know, maybe
right.
going to get his Kentucky Derby thrown
yes.
away. I mean, for me, it's always the sniff test. And when I read a quote, I'm going to read you a quote here. I am very aware of several incidents this year concerning my horses and the impact it's had on my family. We can always do better. Given what has transpired this year, I intend to do everything possible to ensure I receive no further medication complaints. That was Bob Baffert mm-hmm. 6 months ago.
Right. Yeah.
Months ago, he wrote this apology.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I just think, again, you know, you only get so many times where people will believe you.
Right.
And sooner or later, you just become the boy that cried wolf. So I'm curious to see where this thing ends up. At the Arkansas Derby a couple years ago, he had two horses that both tested positive for a banned substance, and his excuse was that his grooms had hand lotion on, and they touched the horses, and that's how they got it. So, I mean, if that was the case back then...
In Puerto Rico, we call ourselves Boricua. We're proud, passionate, and full of life. On our island, adventure finds you. Strangers aren't strangers for long. The size of the audience doesn't change the beauty of the music. And we celebrate every last ray of sun. Live Boricua.
And here you are, you know, 2-3 years later, you would think you'd be extra cautious about this stuff. So I don't believe him. You know, no. I want to believe him, and I want to believe that everything he did, you know, breaking the Triple Crown curse was legit and on the up and up, but yeah. I can't think that it's right just, now, it was and the it sucks
for,
to think that.
For me, it's the opposite of the Aaron Donald situation. As soon as I read the Aaron Donald situation, I was like, this doesn't sound like Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It wasn't.
Yeah. Well, it's so many times with this guy over and over and over again. So we'll see where it ends up. All right, 5:56. Corey Brock's going to join us coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. Talk some Mariner baseball right here. Yay! On 950
KJR Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports headlines.
All right, boys and girls.
What?
Jackson just made it funny. Wow.
That was actually a good one.
It doesn't happen very often. Yeah, we should, right? You know what? Write this down. 6:02 on May the 10th, 2021. Jackson makes funny. Okay, got it. headlines on Softy and Dick brought to you, of course, by our friends at VenueKings.com.
My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Free tickets for the M's and the Tribe start next Thursday in the special vaccination section. Check out VenueKings.com. Use code SOFTY for a little checkout discount, by the way. Got a good one in Cleveland. Cavaliers and Pacers, 66-64 Cavs. 5 minutes to go, third quarter. Hawks lead the Wizards, 88-73. Late third behind 17-7 and 11 from Russell Westbrook. Grizzlies lead the Pelicans, 68-57. Late second quarter.
Russell Westbrook will be featured on Sats or for Losers at 5:45 on Friday.
Well, he is a loser, so that would work
that's
out.
True, that's true.
That's a low blow. I'm sorry. Shouldn't have said that about my all-time favorite Thunder player.
The Celtics say that Jaylen Brown will miss the remainder of the season with a torn ligament in his wrist. The Celtics are D-U-N done. Jaguars reportedly signing Tim Tebow to play tight end. Did you say that already?
No. Maybe you did. No, okay. Good. I like how you asked that, though. The Mets are placing pitcher Jacob deGrom, which is Spanish for deGrom, on the IL. IL. I hate, you know what? Can we just say IR?
It's been IR for,
God,
the DL.
I mean, what the hell, man? Nobody asked us about this. You know when he's on the freaking IR? The IR! I'm not saying IL. I refuse.
Will you say DL? It's been DL forever in baseball.
I'll say whatever I want. How's that sound? IR with tightness in his side. The earliest he can come back, by the way, is May 20th for all you fantasy baseball geeks out there.
Saints defensive end Cam Jordan is paying for racial sensitivity training for the New Orleans Police Department. Wow. It is costing him $120,000. How about that?
Interesting. Interesting. Very interesting. DK Metcalf failed to qualify for the Olympic trials yesterday. Was it Saturday or yesterday? Saturday.
He
did that. 10.36, 100 meters. Finishes 15th. Imagine I want you to, in your mind's eye, go 9 yards deep in an end zone, put your foot on the front of that line, and then take off and run to the opposite goal line and see how long it takes you.
that's
blazing fast, man.
Like, the 40 and 100, those are two completely different animals, man. I can get through a 40 without too much problem. 100, I would just be absolutely dead. Hey, our friend Shale Kapadia, came out today with his post-draft power rankings. Power rankings are my favorite thing to talk about in the offseason. We haven't talked about the Seahawks today much, so where do you think Shale Kapadia has got the Seahawks ranked between 1 and 32? And what rank in the division does Shilkopedia have?
I think he has him third in the NFC West
and
18th overall.
Wow! You were right on the first one. You can ring the bell. He has him third in the NFC West. Mm-hmm. He has them 8th.
Wow.
In the NFL.
So he thinks the NFC West is going to be tough as hell.
The NFC West, LA Rams at 6.
Yep.
49ers at 7,
wow.
And the Seahawks at 8, and the, where's the, oh, he's not as bullish on the old cards as some of us are. Where has he got the cards? Oh, my God.
Well, but that
22nd.
Would, right, that would, though, make sense with the Vegas odds, because they've got the Hawks Vegas odds below the Rams and below the 49ers,
right
to win the whole thing.
But very close to the Cardinals.
Right, but finishing third in this division, they could make the playoffs. They could go 11-6 because there's 17 games now. Mm-hmm. They could make the playoffs and finish in third place in the NFC West.
The more and more I look at this, and the more and more these rosters start to take shape, the more and more I think that we have a very real chance that the entire NFC West mm-hmm. is in the playoffs.
Right.
Because all you got to, and before you say, wow, whatever, you know.
Wait a minute.
Look at the other teams. The other divisions, at least right now in the NFC,
mm-hmm.
appear to have a fairly strong favorite to win that division.
Right.
And every other team in the NFC North, NFC East, NFC South, you look at it and you're like, eh, they're 500 or below.
Right. Well, Tampa Bay should win the South.
Yes.
Dallas should win the East.
Yes.
Green Bay with Rodgers should
yes.
win the North. Now, if
and
Aaron
the rest
Rodgers,
of the teams.
Right, but if Rodgers isn't there, that throws that whole
correct.
Division into
correct.
Total
correct.
Chaos. But the even better metric, I guess, if you will, would be the second place team, right? So if, let's just say Rodgers stays in Green Bay. So Dallas, Green Bay, Tampa Bay. Who's the second best team in the East?
I think it might be the Giants.
Okay, are they good enough to make the playoffs?
I don't think so.
Okay, who's the second place team in the North? The Bears?
The Bears?
Minnesota? They may not be good enough to make the playoffs. The second best team in the South could be New Orleans, but they still may win 8 games
yes.
without Drew Brees.
So there you
so
go.
So the point is that, yes, all 3 of the wild cards could absolutely come from the NFC West, which would mean the first time in the history of the NFL, mm-hmm. every team in the division makes the playoffs. Every single one. How about that?
And I think it's going to be something that, you know, it's obviously only the second year that every team in a division actually could make the playoffs, but I
yes,
think this
exactly.
is going to be
right.
something that's very, very unusual. I mean, I think it could happen this year and may not happen in the NFL for 10 more years. I mean, this is just a weird, we're in a weird time in the NFC West right now where we happen to have 4 teams that we right. all think that are at least good, if not very good.
Well, I think what it also says to me is that the Seahawks better damn well make the postseason in 2021. I mean, they got no excuse not to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
If the other 3 divisions are all top-heavy the way they are,
mm-hmm.
even a wild card spot should be a lock for this football team, right? That's fair to say?
Yes. Oh, it's a massive disappointment. Any year the Seahawks
yeah,
don't make
it. Yeah.
Well, that's part of the reason why I'm so pro Pete Carroll and so pro this franchise. Anytime they don't make the playoffs, it's a massive, massive disappointment. It's only happened one time.
Kind of like this show, right? It's only happened one time. Outside of that, every other day we deliver. Big time, man.
Yeah, and this one sucked.
Only one.
Wow, we were bad.
Oh, is
today,
today the day? Today's the day.
Today was the
Today's
day.
The one day that we don't make the playoffs. Okay.
Tomorrow will be better.
I thought it was last week, but I guess today is worse than I thought. We'll get a break. Corey Brock will join us, talk some Mariner baseball. When's Jared Kelnick coming up? Let's face it, that's all people want to know. Next on 950 KJR.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.